Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now, with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help get your job the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/arts. Just go to Indeed.com/arts right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/arts. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
Hello and welcome to the Undercut Podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Tima Elvis Daly, and we are back to review the third race and the spiritual start of the Formula One 2024 season, the Australian Grand Prix. To do this, I'm joined by the one and only Ellie Mae Taylor. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
Yeah, I'm not too bad. We've got some interesting stuff to talk about, which seems appropriate for the proper start to the season that we're going to go for. But it's not just you and me anyway, because we're also joined by Lower Lap Times' Martin Villari. Welcome to the podcast. How are you?
Thank you. Good morning. Going well, thanks. It was a great race, so we're looking forward to chat about the whole thing. How are you?
Yeah, we got lucky this time. We get a guest on for the first time this season, and we actually have some stuff to delve into properly. It's worked out quite nicely. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, doing well. I'm looking forward to talking about it. It's been a good weekend of racing for pretty much every category I've been watching, so that's a nice surprise as well in some ways. But before we get to the Formula One itself, Ellie Mae, you and I have a little bit of news that we're going to go through, kicking off with Susie Wolff and the FIA.
Yes, Susie Wolff has decided to take legal action against the FIA after they announced that they were investigating a potential conflict of interest after Business F1 magazine made claims that a number of team principals had raised concerns about Susie and Toto Wolff passing confidential information between one another. Bearing in mind that this is the very same magazine that said W Series failed because it wasn't sexy enough. But anyway, all team principals took to social media to say that they had not raised any concerns about the Wolves, and the FIA announced 2 days later that it had closed the investigation, stating that they were satisfied that F1 had protections in place to prevent this from happening. Neither the Wolves or F1 were told that this investigation would take place, and Susie said that she was deeply insulted but sadly unsurprised. And she is now taking legal action over the fact that there has been no transparency or accountability in relation to the conduct of the FIA. This obviously comes at a time where they've had a lack of transparency over the allegations over Christian Horner and Mohammed Ben Sulayem. Even if the public aren't given transparency over this situation, considering Susie is the very person that they were investigating, she is more than entitled to be given transparency over the situation and being given the facts and the evidence that would support why an investigation was even started in the first place. Because going off an unreliable magazine source is ridiculous. I don't think the FIA can no longer take sort of silence as their response to these situations. I obviously understand that actual reports may not be published because they may provide sensitive and private information, but at least a statement explaining this situation and sort of the two above, to be honest, they need to be given.
No, definitely. Couldn't have said it any better than that, to be honest with you. It's just this lack of any kind of idea what's going on, and Hamilton in particular coming out, not just in support of Susie, but also saying that, yeah, it's no better for us inside the tent than those of you outside of it. We don't know what's going on either. And if he can't find out what's going on, then what chance do we have with any of it? I think the thing that also really annoyed me, I know it really annoyed me because I remember being annoyed at it, was the fact that the reporting of this, on the most part, wasn't too bad in terms of the headlines to catch it. But the one that annoyed me the most, shall we say, if I'm being polite, with Sky News, because Sky Sports F1 nailed it, so why not just copy them, actual Sky News, because they had the headline of wife of F1 team boss, and you're like, Susie Wolff is a little bit more than that, I say, at this point, and it just smacks of, really? 2024, you remember that, right? So that was very disappointing to see, and then resulted in me furiously Googling the story to see if anyone else had cocked up quite that badly, and none of the other mainstream Media had managed that, so I was happy with that at least. But again, Sky News should know better at this point.
Just a bit insulting for her, really, isn't it?
Yeah, doesn't need to rub the salt in the wounds there. Some happier news, though. I'll get your thoughts on this one, Martin. Zak Brown's re-signed with McLaren in his role as CEO. He's extended his contract with the Papaya F1 until 2030. He obviously came back in 2016 as the executive director before becoming CEO in 2018. If it ain't broke, don't fix it, I suppose.
Absolutely. I think it's great for McLaren. It's great for them to have that stability in the team. I think a lot of F1 teams lately have been talking about stability. And like conversely, if you look at Ferrari, you know, they've had a plethora of team principals in the last decade and, you know, have really struggled to form and build a championship challenge. I think stability is very important. Zak's done a great job. He's a true racer at heart. I know he's got a great car collection as well, so he's deeply rooted in motorsport. And I think all is happy at McLaren. We've seen a good build of results in the last couple of years. They were competitive on the weekend. Lando got a podium, and I think Oscar certainly could have got one there as well. So great news for McLaren, and good on them.
And hopefully it's the start of some more consistency we see with some of those teams as well, because I think that the closer we get to 2030, Zak Brown might take over the mantle of being the longest serving team principal if things go the way I suspect they do. If Mercedes keep up with their current trend, shall we say, Toto may be asked to stay in your position in every way, shape, or form except team principal. And Horner, well, we'll see what happens there. So maybe him and James Vowles will be the longest serving by then. You're nodding your head as
That,
if you want to say something, anyway.
yeah, I was going to say that's the thing I kind of always respected about Zak Brown, because he came in and tried to be team principal for McLaren and realized he was not the man for the job. And then obviously then hired Andrea Seidel. And it's just always something I've kind of respected that he could take a step back and be like, hang on, I'm not the right man for this. I'm better at being sort of a CEO and still being sort of high up in making team decisions, but
He
you
still
need
very much
someone.
seems the face of it a lot of the time, but that's good in some ways because it takes the pressure off the actual team principal to get on with their duties, and you've got that balance then. Whereas everything rests on Toto or everything rests on Christian in these cases, then everything gets a little bit muddled when you get into the situations that they're in on and off track.
Exactly. And some more good news as well is that Sebastian Vettel has become Porsche's test driver for a 36-hour long run at the Spanish Aragon circuit to allow for the Porsche 963 hypercar to have a full shakedown in order to prepare for the Le Mans for Le Mans in attempt to win their 20th 24-hour Le Mans race. And to increase their chances of success, they will be entering a third car into the race. So do you think we will see Vettel driving in Le Mans?
I can only dare to dream of that at this point. I mean, it was a little bit of a surprise in some ways, wasn't it, to see him is joining for a test. Everyone's like, calm down. It's not happened yet. It's just a test. It's not the full thing. But then they say about the third car and everyone's just looking at that and going, we're just going to wait a second. But that would be quite something. And seeing what he could do in that situation, because obviously quite a different motorsport series from F1. That would be quite fun, but again, imagine he's part of them getting their 20th title.
I think he's always been a big fan of endurance racing, hasn't he? And there is kind of a rumor that actually he kind of approached Porsche, and Porsche was saying, yes, we'll take you on and have that. You can have that opportunity. We're happy for you to have that.
Yeah, I think great for Sebastian. It tells me that he's a little bit itchy. You know, he's had a bit of a break now, and he wants to get back behind the steering wheel. So can totally understand. Yeah, it's interesting what you say there, Ellie, about the endurance racing. Obviously, it targets a totally different skill set in terms of the fuel saving and the strategy and the tire management. And we do have fuel saving in F1, but not to the extent that they will do it in endurance racing. So it's the lift and coast, it's the short shifting, it's even delaying your downshifts before you get to the corner and then pulling them all back. So there are a few techniques even that there are crossover there because there was a bit of fuel saving going on in F1 these days as well. So he'll be able to leverage those skills, and I'm sure he'll do well and maybe get some advice off Fernando as well.
I guess it's also as well trying to find that balance between pushing the car so that you are doing a quick enough lap, but also not pushing it too far that then a reliability issue comes in as well.
Exactly, you've got that to manage as well. I think Carlos was doing a bit of that on the weekend as well. So there are many things you can do, turn the engine down, like the lift and coast, look after your brakes and brake temperatures. It's really the three, isn't it? It's tires, engine, and brakes. And they're kind of the only things that can really you can manage as a driver. Other than that, if the car breaks, it's kind of out of your hands. But yeah, I'm sure Sebastian would do fantastically well in that capacity. And with all the experience, it's a perfect fit.
I think as well, if nothing else comes out of this other than him taking part in the test, the optics will be great because Porsche are an organization when it comes to motorsports where they just do really great videos and coverage of what they get up to. You look at Michael Fassbender's Le Mans series, you look at the recent video they did with Emmanuel Gobbesi testing the Porsche Dakar out in the desert as a couple of examples of that. And it reels you in quite nicely. So having Vettel and Porsche there, you don't really need to do much else. You've already got people's attention, but then you can deliver this nice cinematic experience as well. If nothing else, it's going to be a treat to watch from there. So even if it is just testing, which is all we've got for now, but we'll keep our fingers crossed. As for the race itself, as this is the Australian Grand Prix review, we should probably get around to talking about that. And we'll kick things off with Red Bull. And Eddie, mate, not much to say about them as per usual, but for very different reasons.
It was a really strange DNF from Verstappen, really. You don't often really see rear brakes remaining locked like that, but I guess the only positive that they can really take away from that is that hopefully shouldn't be a common issue, or it hopefully should be easy to rectify. I don't think the issue should plague them throughout the season, and it's one of the cheaper, I imagine, reliability issues to have. It's not an engine or a gearbox, and Perez, I don't even know where he was.
Well, it was kind of summed up quite well by Martin Brundle there, wasn't it, with his comments during the race of Perez has suddenly gone nowhere. And I thought, yeah, we're all wondering what's going on there as well.
A couple of points from me on Max. I initially thought that his outlap was too quick. He did do a very speedy outlap. He was on the grid before, a long time before a lot of the pack were coming down the back straight. And I did suspect that he would have some overheating issues of some kind. Okay, later we found out that the brake was actually being held on and it wasn't due to a quick outlap, but it's just something he'll have to be mindful of in the future anyway. And I think it's very unusual, like you say, Elime, because in the old days the brake pedal actually pushes fluid through the brake calipers, and this sort of thing would never happen. You would never get a brake stuck on. Whereas these days they have like that electronic control unit in between the pedal and the brakes themselves, and it gives the teams a lot more flexibility and the drivers more flexibility in terms of what they can map as their brake shape, the translation between the pedal and the braking system itself. So potentially some computer software mapping issues. Sometimes these things play up. I'd be interested to hear exactly what the issue was there because it's very unusual. So obviously it was getting a signal of some sort, or we all know how technology and computers can be. But like I said, it does give the driver's ability to map a different brake shape, which is very important in the trail braking phase and control. Agree, Ellie, with your thoughts on Checo there. And it was interesting to hear the two Mercedes drivers when they had Checo in front of them. They said, like, this car is a rocket. Like, both of them were shocked at how strong that car was in traction and straight line speed. So certainly wasn't a bad car to be in. So some soul searching there for Checo, I think.
Yeah, that's the problem. I think the fact that he's in a rocket ship, and when Max is there, he's supposed to be backing him up and already wasn't doing that with qualifying. Melbourne is a weak point for him generally, as we've seen with history. But again, you'd think with a rocket ship like that, he'd come through the race a bit further, but then only getting P5 and not being able to really. I mean, he got past Fernando, but then just didn't really make any progress on getting close to Piastri, and the only reason he gained anything on Piastri was because he made the mistake by himself going to turn one, I think. And that's then even that didn't really help him get any closer or actually overtake him. So it was a very odd one, and maybe he's raising some early question marks on whether he gets to stay with that team next year as they try and figure out the musical chairs with all of them. But that's something that's going to be a slow burn for the rest of the season, I think. But happier days finally for Ferrari, Ellie May. We got a 1-2 of all things, and not just the win. We got a 1-2 with Ferrari.
And the 86th 1-2 for the team as well. I mean, they were the strongest team on the grid. Sainz is now, well, was the only non-Red Bull driver to win last season. He may be the only driver to do it this year. If
Optimistic.
you, yeah. If you were Red Bull, wouldn't you be looking at signing him?
Well, this is exactly what
Looking
I've
at
been thinking. This is a perfect situation for him, like you were saying. This is great for him to advertise himself. And I wrote in the notes here, what if a Carlos Sainz in that a Ferrari scratching their heads a little bit going, let's just look at Charles's contract again. Are we sure we can't maybe just get out of that and keep him so he could be Sainz and Hamilton next year? Because if Ferrari can keep on the path that they've been going down at the moment, Carlos has already got 3 wins to match Charles's 5 in the last couple of seasons, and there's no reason to think that if anyone is going to get more wins this season but it's not a Red Bull, it would be Sainz. And if this is what he can do after his appendix has just been pulled out of him a couple of weeks ago, what is he going to be like once he gets fully back up to speed again?
Absolutely. I wanted to pick up on your point about the appendix because I always tell my drivers the technical side of the sport, and that is your technique, is so much more important than the physical side. As long as you're fit enough to drive the car, you're good. And that's not to say physical is not important. Absolutely, it is important, but there's a point at which there's more to be found on the technical side. I think of Max when he won in 2021, he had a cramp in his calf. Carlos winning now, just coming back from appendix surgery. Ayrton Senna won races where he could barely lift the trophy up at the end of the race. And so I always say, if you're good technically, don't worry. The rest, it's all about the steering wheel and the pedals. And Carlos did a brilliant job. I have to be honest and say that the overtake probably wasn't an organic overtake. I've been tossing up in my mind the recent afternoon and this morning, would he have won on genuine pace if Max was still in the race? And was that an organic overtake? Because at that point, Max wasn't smoking those brakes. So, but then, we later found out that they were on constantly, and Max had a bit of a slide in turn three, which allowed Carlos to get close there. So it would have been interesting to see those two fight for P1 organically. I still think Carlos could have competed, and definitely with the strategy and everything, he still could have potentially won that race. So yeah, very strong showing from Carlos. I agree with the sentiment that he's a hot ticket item for any team, be that Mercedes or Red Bull. He's definitely improved his driving a lot last couple of years.
We were almost robbed of seeing someone finally bring it to Verstappen.
Yeah, I think what you and I were discussing earlier off the podcast in terms of the race and the quality of it, I wouldn't have mind if Verstappen had still won in the end, as long as Sainz would have been able to take that fight to him, because at least, like you say, we'd have been able to see someone take it to him for a change, because it's not Perez doing it, and Leclerc has moments but doesn't seem to have that same fire in him at the moment that Carlos does. So even if Max had still won, I feel like it would have been a lot closer. It wouldn't have been one of his runaway victories that we're used to seeing at the moment. You were saying at the moment that Mercedes is potentially a hot topic place for him to be looking at going for next year. If I were him, I'd be trying to see if there's anyone else available after this weekend, because my oh my, I mean, my notes at one point before I looked at Russell were just priced on a bike. What is going on with that team? And Hamilton DNF, Russell DNF, and a bit of a coin toss in some ways as to who's more to blame for Russell's DNF. But we could get into that in a second. But I'll get your thoughts anyway. First of all, they are going backwards now.
Awful weekend. I mean, I can't take any positives away from their weekend, really. I mean, Hamilton really struggled this weekend due to sort of him finding the car really inconsistent. Just not even sort of lap to lap, it would be within one lap, just around like a few corners. And I really don't know how you kind of sort that issue out. That doesn't seem like a quick fix. And I think Russell was perhaps doing the best he could, but then obviously just crashed spectacularly. The race data suggested that there was strange brake and throttle patterns into turn six on Alonso's car, which suggested there was that was a possible cause of Russell's crash, as the dirty air caused sort of instability in his downforce levels. Obviously, Alonso was then given a drive-through penalty as a result, which converted into a 20-second penalty for potential dangerous driving. But do we really think Alonso would purposely brake test George?
I think this is the thing, because you and I were talking about this just before we started recording, Martin, and it's one of those things where maybe Alonso would do that in a I'll try and be sneaky about it kind of way, but regardless of if it was deliberate or not, and you've got the brake test nature of it, it's still been testing George's ability to react to what's going on in front of him, and he still kind of failed that test quite spectacularly. And with a driver in front of you like Fernando, you've got to think that if you're chasing him down to try and gain a position, you know he's not going to give that up easily. Look at literally any race that Fernando's been in, and you'll know that if he's got half a chance, and even when he doesn't have half a chance, he's still going to try something unless he's got some other strategy in mind. So that's why I was saying a bit of a coin toss in terms of that. But Martin, you're looking like you already want to say something there.
Yeah, I think I've got a good read on this one. So yes, I've had a look at the onboard. Fernando did brake test him. I think he did it with the intention to, because there's a long straight afterwards, right? So he, like, George would have got DRS, George would have got a run on him. They probably would have passed him. So Fernando did it with the intention, like, I just want to stop George getting a run on me down this long straight and hopefully hang on through the DRS zone. I'm 100% sure he's brake tested him. I've seen the footage. Like Fernando, we're talking about someone that held up Hamilton in the pits in 2007. He does these things, right? This is Fernando. He fights for DRS. Like, I've seen him play some games with Lewis in Canada, trying to let Lewis through so that Fernando can get DRS and pass him again. So he's a very switched on character. With regards to how it affected George, like, in a true brake testing event, like, you would just smash front wing to rear wing. I think this is still a genuine mistake from George, because he's put the left rear on the grass and that's what spun the car. Like, dirty air doesn't spin the car in that way. If anything, you just induce a little bit of understeer. George would have just had to get out of the throttle and it just would have washed his front end through that corner. The fact that he's put the left rear on the grass, spun the car and ended up in the wall, George is too close to the outside of the track. So I still feel like there is some genuine element from George there that he's, Alex Albon had a similar crash there, I think a few years ago, 1 or 2 years ago. I'm not sure if it was quali.
Into
Yeah,
last year
left
during the
rear.
race, wasn't it?
Yep, there you go. So left rear on the grass on the entry. And I've got here in the notes that both Mercedes struggled in FP1 and FP2 with entry oversteer at turn one and turn nine in practice. Expect higher rear tire degradation from them. So I put that there on Friday because both of them, as soon as they turned the wheel, the rear was stepping out into turn one and into the high speed turn nine as well. And it's the same thing that's happened. So I got both elements there. I think Fernando did brake test, but I think George has still got to take responsibility for that as well.
Which he'll definitely have taken some punishment for that, shall we say, in terms of what happened to his car, because that's not going to just buff out quite so easily. Despite all of that, though, Aston Martin did manage to have a decent time of it, with Alonso somehow, despite the 20-second penalty, only going as far back as P8, which kind of shows how good he was driving up to that point. And Stroll having a weirdly decent race. It's odd for us to praise him generally. But P6 after Alonso's penalty, a decent job, which it feels weird to say anyway. I don't know what to do with this.
Just kind of quietly got on with his race, really, didn't he? I don't
You just
think
come to get expecting him to do what he does best and be Stroll, but it just never happened. It's like, oh, okay, fair enough. Good on you.
there's literally no drama from him whatsoever. He just got on with it quietly. I think that was the best he could have achieved, really.
Yeah, there's not really much to say on that one, I don't feel like. So I'm just going to skip straight ahead to McLaren, because if we start praising Lance Stroll too much, I'll get quite lightheaded. McLaren, though, did have a very good weekend. qualified both cars within the top five, and then P3 and P4 with Norris on the podium and Piastri in P4. Would have been much nicer if we could have had Piastri on the podium at his home race, but there we go. I think that's one of the things I want to talk about there, the benefits of swapping the cars around. I could see what they were trying to do there, and if Piastri hadn't made the error into turn one that he did, I would have been more annoyed that they hadn't maybe swapped them back around. So, because Norris wasn't going after Leclerc, really. He got close towards the end, but it was a bit too little too late. Would have been interesting to see if Piastri could have made a dent into that gap instead. And if not, then with a couple of laps left, you could have swapped them back around again. Although I'm not sure the Australians would have let McLaren out of the paddock after that if they did that. But all that being said, 27 points, I think they managed to get this weekend. Pretty solid result. And two home races in a row where Piastri scores points, so he's not going to be too disappointed with that, even if he would have liked that podium.
Yeah, I mean, it now means obviously that Norris has now beaten Nick Heidfeld's record of most podiums by a win with 14 podiums. But I think both drivers did really well this weekend. Obviously, McLaren messed up a little with the first pit stop for Norris, who he was in second, so and then got undercut by both Leclerc and Piastri, so they could have, done a bit better on that. But I think the quarter swap was fair enough. Piastri's lap times were a little inconsistent and Norris was quicker, but at the same time, Norris never found himself fighting with Leclerc for seconds. So it was kind of half a dozen of one, six of the other. I don't quite know.
I think it's just one of those times where if it was any other Grand Prix, we wouldn't have minded as much. But because it was Oscar's home race, you're like, come on, just come on.
Yeah, I think this was an issue for Oscar in the sense that McLaren pitted him too early. I think he came in on lap 10, if I'm not mistaken. And then Lando obviously went, 5 laps longer. So, and when Oscar came out, he came out in all this traffic and he pitted with Leclerc as well. So he was battling. I really feel like McLaren compromised his overall race there. And similar to Charles as well, that was just way too early for a pit stop and to put them back into traffic. And that's why Lando could cruise up to him. And then I do think it was inevitable. I think it was going to pass him anyway, or, at least they would have, wasted a lot of time together. So I can definitely understand the move. But what I found interesting was just how easy Oscar let it go. He was like, yeah, okay. He kind of, he was very compliant. I wonder if it was a different driver, like a Fernando or a Carlos, even he's not that fond of that, or Lewis or George. It was interesting. Oscar, I think he kind of knew, like, my tires are already gone. So it was an interesting move. And then, yeah, Lando just didn't have the pace to fight for the front two. The Ferraris were very strong this weekend.
I think you would very much being able to tell the impact that Mark Webber's having on him in terms of pouring all of his knowledge and experience into how to approach a race weekend, in the same way that in Formula 2 you can see Mika Häkkinen's impression on Kushmaini and the difference that makes from one year to the next. And Piastri just, yeah, he would have loved that P3, but I think he's kind of playing a whole other game with a whole different set of rules that Lando doesn't maybe know about yet. And he's maybe just plotting ahead in some ways, like I'll get this later, and it'll be again. There's still all the chance that if we get a wild race this year, then if Piastri can get that race win before Norris, he's not going to care about not getting a podium at his home race because he'll have the ultimate psychological advantage then. So it's going to be very interesting to see there. And the thing seems to faze Oscar at the moment from what we've seen as he comes into F1. He dealt with the fact that they had a bad car for the first half of last year. And then just made the most of the opportunities when the car was improving and just continued to build since then. And it's just very silent assassin from him, it feels like, and just biding his time.
I think he knows as well that he's still got to work on his racecraft. He's very good around one lap during qualifying, but that's where sort of Norris shines a bit more, is during the race he's able to be a bit more consistent. And that will just come with time.
Absolutely. One of Oscar's development areas for this year, compared to last year, has been tyre management and race pace. And he's been saying that the first two races this year have gone well in that area. So, yeah, I've got a prediction that eventually Oscar is going to get it on top of Lando. I just see him as slightly more focused. And like you say, Thiemo, it's having the mentorship of Mark as well is is invaluable. And like, I truly believe all the drivers should have someone like this in their corner when they make the step to F1, because so many of them have come up prematurely. Like Carlos has struggled, Alex Albon has struggled. There have been so many that have come in and just really struggled, but then several years later they've been ready. You know what I mean? Like Carlos now, for example. So what Mercedes did with George 3 years in Williams was a very mature and the right way to do it. He could make all his mistakes in Williams, and it was not a sink or swim situation. They took a lot of time with him and moved him up, in an organic way. So yeah, absolutely. I think he's got the right team around him, and I think it's a matter of time before he starts to really turn the screws on Lando.
Sticking with you a second then, Martin, if every driver needs one of those, who the hell do we get for Daniel Ricciardo? Because we hate the fact that he is languishing down there. We get you for him. Okay. Because
Me.
qualifying was terrible, but P12, he was showing glimmers of potential towards the end, but then he just couldn't seem to catch Albon. He'd keep going from 3 seconds to 1 second, and then it would drop back. And like, what the hell just happened? You were nearly on him. So how do we fix Ricciardo?
Look, in our podcast together, you asked me who would I like to work with, past or present,
That's true.
and I said, like, to dig Daniel out of McLaren would have been a project I would be willing to take on. And then I listened to his interview after the race, and he mentioned driving technique, and that's something he was going to look into. And he struggled at McLaren with that, and he's struggling now to really be at one with this car. And I think engineers and engineering can be just too much into the detail and the data. I really believe a fresh set of eyes, someone just got to come and look at this in the basic elements and just say, okay, what is it that you're not feeling? What are the areas that we need to look at? And just give Daniel a confidence and someone reassuring alongside him that just basically says, don't worry, we'll sort this out. Like we'll chip away at it. And yeah, I truly believe he needs that. And I don't know how many drivers on the grid have specialist driver coaches alongside them. There's a team of engineers, like vehicle dynamics engineers, performance engineers, strategy engineers, aerodynamics engineers. There's plenty of them. But how many specialist driver coaches are there? I don't think there's that many. And yeah, I'll put my hand up. Daniel, if you're listening, mate, reach out.
We'll clip that bit and use it for the promo, maybe for the podcast.
It's a bit like when Christian Horner said when Daniel Ricciardo came back that he's picked up bad habits and he needs to sort of forget them to get back to, or unlearn them to get back to the Danny Rick that we know. But most people can't do that alone. He does need someone. He needs someone there to really help him out, because qualifying, it was a little messy from him, with track limits. He wasn't out by a little bit, he was out by quite a bit. And I think it's really unfortunate, because I think that RB had enough pace for both drivers to be in the points this weekend, and he didn't. But anyway, Tsunoda had a great weekend. Ozzy got into Q3, qualified eight, pretty much retained that position really, and was promoted up to seventh as
Similar
it all
to
goes
Stroll
down.
in a lot of ways, though. He just kind of got on with his race, didn't really attract too much attention to anything. You're kind of expecting something to happen there, maybe, but nothing really did, and it just kind of kept his head down and had a bit of a lonely race in a lot of ways, because I don't think anyone really fought him or he had to defend from anyone. It was just kind of get on with the job at hand, which for those crucial little points that the teams at the back end of the grid are going to need, that's worked a treat out for in there, and is something that Williams weren't quite able to manifest themselves, because that's the one of the bigger talking points from the weekend. There's a lot to potentially go through here, but Albon did qualify in P12, finished in P11, so just outside of the points. And before we go into all the events that led into this, I think from the results that we've now seen, probably the better idea to put Albon in that car, because as much as I like Sargeant just as an individual, I don't think he would have been able to get better than P11 if he'd been the one in that car. But we got here because Albon crashed out at T6, as you mentioned earlier, Martin, in FP1. It's a little further ahead essentially from where he crashed out during the Grand Prix last year, so he's really not liking that. Sargeant finished P14 in FP1. which was weirdly behind Albon because of the times he'd put in ahead of himself crashing. He then was P13 and FP2. Then there was obviously no third chassis for Albon after the car couldn't be repaired in time. So he took Sargeant's car for the weekend. James Vowles made that decision. And the results in Australia, I was just looking at them for Albon previously to see what we'd maybe be able to expect. Obviously, there's a bit of fluctuation with teams and whatnot. Last year was obviously a DNF, previously a P10 with that excellent drive, which saw him pretty much do a zero stop race, more or less. And then came P14 in 2019. So not too bad. So you can see the logic there. And Sargeant last year, in comparison, he was classified as P16, but ultimately didn't finish the race. And the final bit I'll just say on this one before I hand it over to either one of you there is that it's worth noting too that Williams won't have any new chassis for Japan or China either. So they're having to fix this, get what they can from it, and hope for the best. And with two tracks where Japan, there's plenty of room to crash around there at fairly high speeds. In China, you've not been there in a while. I don't think Albon's ever raced in China. I think maybe 2019 would have been the one time, but again, that would have been for the 1000th Grand Prix. Sargeant as well, brand new track for him. Potentially perilous times for Williams.
It's obviously an incredibly tough situation, and you can't help but feel incredibly sorry for Logan Sargeant when, he's done absolutely nothing wrong here. But because that pack is so tight, and most people would argue that the Alex Albon is the man who is more likely to get the points for Williams. And even if he didn't get the points, if it goes back to count back, you still want to finish in the highest position that you can. And you understand why they made that call, but the question I kind of wanted to ask you, Martin, is kind of if you were Logan Sargeant's driver coach right now, how would you pick him up from this situation?
I think you're asking more from like a mentality mindset, like how would I support him in that role? I think like from my side, I would have to just look at the technical side, like the driving, and just pull out elements and compare him to Alex as best I can and say, okay, what's happening in, is it in the slow speed? Is it in the high speed? Is it under braking? Is it mid corner? Is it rotation? Like we just need to start to look at the whole thing. I can't pinpoint like it, like, and same with Daniel, like where is the time? It's hard for me to tell from here. I need a lot more information to pick him up mentally, emotionally, very difficult. I truly believe Alex's crash was unlucky. He's got on the curb there and it's lifted the car in the air, which is fine. But when it's come back down, the way it's landed, it's just speared him off into the wall. And Fernando actually did the same thing a few laps later. I saw him come onto that curb, lifted the car up and it landed fine. And he just and carried on. It was very, very, very unlucky. And I think in Logan's case, and it's a reminder to all of the drivers in every category, it's not a decision that was based on the events that happened in Melbourne. It's something that's based on the previous 24 races that Logan's had with the team. And James Vowles has looked at that and said, well, based on everything we know about Logan and everything we know about Alex, Alex is our best shot for this weekend. So I totally agree and concur. It's very unfortunate for Logan. But it's a reminder that, every time you step in the car, you need to perform. You need to be competing for those points, competing for wins or poles, doing your absolute best because you never know who's watching. You never know who's going to take your seat. You never know when an event like this is going to happen. And if he was truly, matching Alex, there would be no need to make a decision like this. It also shows James Vowles, the team principal there, how much he said he's come out saying he's stressed the organization to the absolute limit, such that they've been working so hard in all these other areas that he was willing to take that chance and say, fine, we don't have a spare chassis, but we've got a competitive car, we've got a great team, or we've got a good package here. So interesting call from James there to not. He's obviously made sacrifices in some areas of the team to be able to prioritize and optimize other areas of the team. So really interesting call. And I wonder if Alex was truly informed of the importance of the chassis he was in. Like, was there words to him at practice saying, Alex, it's practice. And likewise to Logan, this is all we have, guys. So bring it home. I'm not sure. It really hit home until it was actually in the wall.
Moving on to Sauber then, which for me this weekend was a team which had a lot of potential but just didn't manifest it into reality really. On the one hand, positives that we can take away is that they're doing better at the pit stops, but they really need to fix those. And I think Bottas was their best chance of getting a point, maybe. I won't say multiple points. I think P10 would probably have been the best he could have managed, but again, the pit stops were still not brilliant. And Bottas now has the unfortunate record, as we've been reminded by Martin Brundle from Bahrain now, that he has both the first and second slowest pit stops in F1 history. And Sauber are really trying to give him the third longest at this rate as well, you may.
They really need to get on top of the cross-threading of their wheel nuts. It's such a costly problem to have. And, they've also received a £5,000 fine for losing control of a wheel nut during Bottas's pit stop and causing a potentially dangerous condition in the pit lane where they have to always have spares on hand. It's just a mental situation.
Yeah, there's really not much to say about it because it's just, you do wonder, like, okay, we've had a change in the team in a lot of respects, and it's this kind of weird filler period before Audi comes in. But that doesn't mean you just forget how to do stuff whilst you're just waiting around and having a fun time with it. You still need to be there. And while Bottas seems to have checked out in a lot of ways of being in Formula One, he's just there to have a good time. It feels like Joe's probably going to get quite annoyed about this. Like, I still have a career that I'm trying to salvage here, and I'd like to do well in China. And if he's in a decent position, if that's the crazy race of the season that we get, and he's in a position to point and he loses out on that because of a pit stop, because of the wheel nuts that they've not been able to get on board on top of, he's going to be mad. And so are all of the Chinese fans that come to that race. It's, yeah, I don't know what the word is. It's just a curious, curious situation.
Someone said online, at what point do the drivers just stick on like a set of hards or something and just race the entire race with just one set of tires and then just take the penalty for not changing to a different set of tires because that's less costly?
Be interesting to see if
It's
they
less
attempt that
risky,
at some
isn't it?
point.
Yeah, it'd be less risky given their pit stops. I think I agree with your sentiment there, Thiemma. Like what Valtteri's doing, it's great that he's enjoying his life and enjoying his racing, but it does rub off as a little bit of not focused, and the whole team around as well. Even with that color scheme, like that also screams that we're not serious about that. Even my girlfriend doesn't follow the sport much. I was watching the race with her, and she's like, "What is that?" So it's a very, very much an informal team at the moment, and it just needs a bit of recentering.
Has anyone seen the Savannah Bananas online?
You're gonna have to enlighten me at least.
No, yeah.
It's basically a baseball team. They have their like a different league, but basically it's like a cross between baseball and dancing. Like they'll just break out into dance at like random points of the match. And it's kind of almost like High School Musical. It's amazing. I haven't actually seen like the whole thing, but I've seen like clips of them breaking out into dancing and it looks amazing. But there is, I'm not sure who they were against, but there is a team that has a black and sort of that fluorescent green color, the same as Steak or Sauber. And there is a guy with like a mustache and a mullet. And I'm pretty sure that that's Valtteri Bottas. That's what he is doing on his off days.
It wouldn't surprise me, honestly, if he's been moonlighting in this team.
I'd love to see him do that though.
I mean, give him 5 minutes and get. I mean, if this is clipped as well for the episode, if we put that out there, if we just tag him, who knows? We can be the ones responsible for that at some point. Talking of a team though that needed recentering, Martin Haas appeared to be doing that at the moment. Qualifying was a little shaky, but they took the opportunities where they fell during the Grand Prix and managed to maximize the potential there, not just with Hülkenberg this time, but with Magnussen as well, ultimately because of George DNFing. But he still had to be in the right place at the right time for that. P9 for Hülkenberg, P10 for Magnussen, more points on the board, second race in a row, and at the same race where Hülkenberg got points last year. Good hunting ground for them. You'd like to see it, which it's kind of, you hope this isn't the start of a fluke period and this is actual genuine progress because they could do with it. And I want to be able to praise them consistently and not just once or twice a season. I don't want this to be it for them.
Yeah, absolutely agree. They've got one of the best driver lineups in Formula One, in my opinion. Like Nico Hülkenberg and Kevin Magnussen, a combination of experience, but both of them have experience and both of them have speed as well. So a good combination of experience and speed. And it's good that they just get their heads down, that they're getting the job done. And that's kind of sums up Melbourne in a nutshell. If you can just complete the race, you're a good chance of points. So they've put together a strong weekend, and I guess it sums up street circuits in general. Like Singapore's, your Baku's, your Miami's, your Monaco's. If you can just kind of complete a race there, you're a good chance of getting points if you're in a midfield team. So they've both put together really strong races. I must admit, I didn't follow their strategies that closely, so I'm not sure if they took advantage of Hamilton's VSC or not. But yeah. Solid job from the team.
Think they did with Hülkenberg because Hülkenberg was on mediums or no, or softs. He was on softs, wasn't he? I think. Oh, I'm not sure anymore. But anyway, I think what annoyed me the most, or just, is that the FIA always looks into impediment after qualifying because we didn't actually manage to see it on TV, but Perez impeding Hülkenberg potentially lost Hülkenberg, getting into Q2. And with the pack being so tight, that may have cost him so much, especially because Albert Park is a difficult track to overtake on, whilst Perez, in theory, had the best car on the grid and can fight for better points. I mean, luckily, Hülkenberg was able to salvage his race and get into the points with a lot better sort of race pace from the Haas. And with it being such a high degradation circuit for tyres, it actually, I think, really shows how far Haas have come in managing their tyres better.
No, definitely. And like I said, I hope this isn't just like a one or two off for them. I hope this is signs of genuine progress, which I'm trying to find some kind of a natural segue there for Alpine, because my only note for them was at least they finished the Grand Prix this year.
My notes kind of the same. It's not great, but a little better. I mean, Ocon's race was pretty much ruined by a visor strip that got into his brake duct, causing him having to pit again and get that sorted. And there wasn't really any way back into sort of the race then with sort of the Alpine's pace at the minute. But I do genuinely think if that hadn't happened, Ocon may have managed to get P10.
Yeah, I've been very impressed with Esteban's mood and mentality given the car's performance. Like he dragged that car into Q2. He's been always saying in the interviews, like we're here, we need to just keep our heads down and keep working. And for me, that's really impressive, and that's the true sign of a character, their character and a leader. When things are not going well, he's there, he's motivated, he put in a great qualifying. And conversely, correct me if I'm wrong, but did Pierre cross the pit lane exit early twice? I think he did it in qualifying and got a warning, and he did it in the race as well.
Yeah,
Like
Martin Brundle was commenting
extremely.
about that, saying that when he did it in the race, that he did that in qualifying yesterday. You'd think he'd have learnt after that one to not do that again.
To make that mistake once is extremely unprofessional. To make it twice, I don't know what to say. Like, yeah, he maybe he switched off. I'm not sure.
Couldn't blame him if he did switch off, to be honest, considering the car that he's in. But one silver lining slash bold prediction that I'll make there is that if, for whatever reason, Alpine decide to replace both drivers for next year, maybe they'll have found their team principal with Esteban Ocon, because they need a leader at the moment, and we're not entirely sure who's in charge there. So maybe with that mentality, he could fill that role quite nicely for them.
Just the motivation
Yeah.
for the team.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, like I say, it's impressive. It's impressive from Esteban. He's probably the only one there with like taking it as professionally and as seriously as possible. He's got his head down. He's a fantastic driver. Extremely underrated in my opinion. He's a great driver. And yeah, he's for me, he's a standout in that team.
We'll move on to our winners and spinners then. And Ellie Mae, one of us had to do this. You've gone very route one, and no one can blame you for it.
Yeah, I've gone for Sainz. I mean, he's come into the season without a drive for next year, had his appendicitis start 2 weeks ago. the only non-Red Bull driver, well, the only person other than Max Verstappen to win in what, 10 races? I'm not sure what else he can do.
No, there's very little at this point. I think, yeah, just keep building on that and just keep doing what he's doing. Whatever he's having for breakfast, whatever his driving techniques or whatever he's been doing when he's been recuperating in bed, copy all of it if you can find out what it is. As for myself, I've gone for Haas for the reasons that we said there. Yes, some of it was luck, but at the same time, you've got to be there at the right place at the right time to capitalize on it, and they managed that, so I was just really impressed by that with them. And all these little points will add up at the end of the season, and even if it goes for count back, P9 and P10, that's good for a team like
I thought it would be a good time to just say that Jesse's girlfriend Georgia is doing his winners and spinners on his behalf, and he and she also went with Haas. So I just thought I would, seeing as you've just said Haas, it'd be great to just
Fair
follow on from that. And she put strategy perfect, working really well as a united front, experience of both on track really shining as they fight off challenges to those crucial points.
Yeah, I agree with you there, Ellie. I think Carlos, he put together a very strong weekend. Just want to touch on Charles for a minute because he mentioned in qualifying he got like he had a lot of understeer, and then just before his final run he dialed in a lot of front wing, and then the car just went to oversteer. So he got very lost during the weekend on setup, and Carlos just. He was very consistent. He just put together a good weekend. He built on all his practice sessions and agree with the appendix surgery. Like a surgery is such a, you know, you've got the anesthetic, you go under, you, he was in bed for 7 days, all of your joints, like, you know, to get out of bed and put in a performance like that, it's truly a remarkable effort. So hats off to Carlos. He's my, my winner there.
It did remind me of that meme of the old man leaning over saying, call the ambulance, and then he pulls the gun. And it's like, but not for me. And it's just kind of, yeah, I don't look as bad as I actually am. So that was, yeah, was a very impressive drive from him. Spinners, we're not going to need too much to go through this, I don't think, for the obvious reasons. For me, for starters, Mercedes, we've been through why they span quite literally in Russell's case for this weekend. Sort your stuff out, Mercedes. Just honestly, you know you can do better. You look at this team from this year and last year, you do genuinely scratch your head and wonder how they were one of the best teams in Formula One history and how they've been able to fall quite so far from grace. And admittedly, it could be a lot worse for them, but for a team of that caliber, this is a bit ridiculous. Ellie May, you've also gone harsh but fair.
Yeah, I've gone for Perez. Essentially, just do better. With Verstappen out, he should have at very least been on the podium, but he was never once fighting for a podium. He was just nowhere. And for Georgia Spinner, she's gone for Williams. She's put, I know in hindsight is 2020, but they've tanked their reputation, brand, and the confidence of one out of two of their drivers for no points. With 3 point sitters out of the race, these are the opportunities you need to grab. You need to invest that 23 money into a spare chassis.
Yeah, you kind of do. I mean, it's I still go back to the thing of I don't think Logan would have got points. So you're kind of damned if you do, damned if you don't. But the easy solution would have been just have a spare chassis in the first place so that you don't find yourself in this situation.
It's
Yeah,
sort
or don't crash.
of, yeah, that's probably the biggest thing.
That
But I think it also shows how Williams are still such in a sort of precarious position. It almost harks back to what was it, 2015 when they, was it 2015, 2016 when they almost didn't have cars ready for winter testing.
I think that was 2016, I want to say, that year, because 14 and 15 went well for them, but 16, I think, was then when trouble started happening. But yeah, not good for them. Martin, who's your spinner for this weekend?
Yeah, agree with yourself. Probably Mercedes. That car just looked undrivable from the moment it rolled out of the box. Like both cars just couldn't get the car into the corner without it wanting to swap ends, basically. I don't know if it's a center of gravity thing, like when there's too much weight or height in the back, the moment you turn into the corner, it just overloads the rear tires and wants to go into a spin. It and not only when you've got that handling issue, it then saps the driver's confidence as well. How can you be confident putting a car into like turn 9 and 10, that quick chicane at like 280 or whatever, 300 kilometers an hour. How can you be confident to turn the wheel and put the car in there? It just must, yeah, like George actually did a fair job to get that car up there. So Mercedes for me, a lot of head scratching, and I bet Lewis is happy with where he's off to next year.
That was my immediate thought when that happened to him this morning. I thought, nope.
Yeah.
Anyway, then, do you want to take us through our predictions review where you actually didn't do as well as you normally do, which is very out of character for you?
Yeah, I mean, last time up with Australia, I think I almost got 4 points, but didn't do as bad as you because you got 0 points.
Yeah,
I
but
got
I'm
the.
going for a different strategy this year.
It was 1 point for myself with the Verstappen pole, and then it was 3 points for Jesse with the Verstappen pole, Norris P3, and double Haas points. I really hope this doesn't mean that he overtakes me now in the standings, because I don't think we'll hear the end of it.
Even if he does, it won't be for long, let's face it.
I hope so.
Talking of uncharacteristically doing well, though, fancy F1 review. I'll get on to you in a second because you did do pretty well here, but I was looking down the list, and on the curbs in a probably career best P4 for me for this weekend with Australia, 188 points to my name. I'm amazed that I did that well because normally I'm absolutely nowhere, and I was checking to see who I'd had in my team, and lo and behold, after Saudi Arabia, I made some very good changes because I swapped out Max and Lewis for Charles and Ferrari with Hülkenberg. That worked an absolute treat for me this weekend. So I think I may have peaked at round 3 of 24, but I've got to do good at some point. We'll leave it there and I'll just fade back into the background now. But for this weekend, anyway, your podcast team was out front, leading the way with 219 points. Midbed's Racing, though, hot on their heels in P2 with 200 points, and then Obi Racing 3 with 192 points. However, for the rest of you, or the rest of your teams, not so good. I mean, Jaffa Cake Racing, Jesse's other team, absolutely pummeled in P33 with the meager 20 points scored over the entire weekend. Verstappen, Williams, Ocon, and Albon in that team. And then your team of Extra Magnifico Terrestri, 15 points. Oof. Behrman still in there for
I
starters,
know.
not helping. Verstappen
No,
and
not at
Williams there.
all.
What were you doing?
The bit that pains me the most is that Carlos Sainz is in both my Extra Magnifico Terrestri and Justica Para Carlos, and I changed it for obviously Ollie Bearman when
And I
they
forgot to switch it back.
flipped it, but never switched them back. So I've lost out on so many points this weekend, but.
That would have been amazing if he couldn't race this one and you picked up Ollie again.
I'll say, hell of a wild prediction didn't pan out for you, but it could be worse because you could have been Bulls on Speed in P37, who scored 11 points this weekend. I looked at the team, I'm still not quite sure how the maths worked out for that, but you don't want to be them. We'll give you a full update for the overall course in our Japanese Grand Prix preview. We'll give you a bit more time to have a look at all of that. And that's pretty much it for this episode. The Australian Grand Prix was easily the best Grand Prix we've had so far this year. Hopefully not an outlier, and hopefully we can get a bit more like this in terms of Jeopardy, close racing, potentially close racing with Verstappen and Sainz, so we can see a proper battle there at some point. Do you two have any final points you want to address before we round out this episode?
No.
No, nothing from me. Looking forward to Suzuka. I think it'll be a return to form for Max. Unfortunately, that car driver combination is machine around Suzuka. So let's see if Ferrari can compete there, and that will be probably a true test to see how close they are.
Yeah, I get the bad feeling we're going to have a rough crash down back to earth, much like Ollie Bearman having Formula 2 this weekend. But, we'll hope for a couple of weeks at least on that one. That is all we've got time for on this week's episode. In the meantime, Martin, I'm going to just throw it to you. If people want to see or find a bit more of you, where can they find you?
Yeah, so Instagram, TikTok's probably the best place, and YouTube. It's just Lower Lap Time, lowerlaptime.com for all coaching products. So you can send me an email as well, which is on my Instagram, martin@lowerlaptime.com.
And Ellie Mae, you've got a nice little project that you've been working on. Do you want to give that a plug while we're here?
Yeah, you can find me on the podcast Instagram, where I've been documenting some incredible women within motorsport. The first two posts were on racing drivers, the third was on engineers, This week's will be on operations. I can't currently find a better word for it, but it's essentially those who work in motorsport but do not fall under sort of racing driver, engineer, or those that sort of work in media. So keep your eyes peeled for that. And I should hopefully have something else out on Masters Historic, but I've asked Jesse for some photos on the series like 3 weeks ago, maybe even a month ago, and just, trying to be organized. I asked again last week. I still haven't got them, so if it
This
doesn't
is
get
your public
posted,
announcement
you know
to shame
why.
him.
Yeah. If I out
Fair
him,
enough.
maybe he'll keep it.
I don't think it will work, but it's good to try anyway. As for myself, you can find me over on the curbs, on the curbs pub chat, visit fast, Paddock Charity on Instagram. Lots of new stuff coming there soon. Just need to get it all organized and looking in the right direction there. There's some fun stuff coming. And that is pretty much it. Do check in for us again when we preview the Japanese Grand Prix in 10 days' time or so, I want to say, depending on when you listen to this. And make sure you've subscribed, liked, and got notifications turned on so you don't miss a thing for that. In the meantime, Martin, Ellie Mae, thank you very much both for being here, and thank you at home or wherever else you are for listening to this episode. Thank you very much. Goodbye.